everybody. Welcome to WD Carousel of Podcast. My name's Crystal.
And I'm Ian.
And today we actually have a special treat that we're going to do.
Yeah, we do.
We are both excited, ecstatic. The elder millennial inside of me is beyond words to have the opportunity to introduce and interview a pretty important writer, producer, music man of all talents.
Yes, exactly. We will be talking to Jim McGann, and we will go to him right now.
And there he is.
And there you are. Awesome.
Well, how are you?
I'm great.
We were literally just singing eye to eye before you hopped on, and we were wondering if you were going
to. We were worried you were
going to
hear us sing it.
That's funny. It's interesting because in a Goofy movie, I think we had two different sets of songwriters, the ones that did After Today and whatnot, and then there's the Powerline songs, which I think were written by someone else.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that, you know, people seem to really respond to eye, and
and it's funny how the whole movie has had sort of a resurgence in recent years, but that song has become just hugely popular again.
Oh, definitely. We've been seeing on social media so many people bringing back cosplays of Powerline, and you know, not just Goofy and Max and Daisy and all of them. I mean, it's become a huge thing again. And it's almost like this sleeper movie became a cult classic, and everybody is revitalizing it and bringing it back. And that's what makes like this opportunity so amazing. Because
it's super relevant. Right.
Well, I'm going to point Ian and Crystal there. I pointed to you.
Okay.
I know everything about you. Everything, right? And you know nothing about me, and it's just so embarrassing.
I know. We are ashamed.
Well, you're in Minnesota, so
we escape as often as we can.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I have no idea if you're recording right now or not.
Yeah, we are. We're not.
Our plan here, we usually have kind of a structure, but I'm thinking for today, we're just going to kind of roll with it.
Yeah, we'll freeform this and.
Yeah.
Okay. Crystal, I know you're not a chatterbox, so you won't talk much during this, right?
You can tell.
Okay. And Ian, you know, you chime in nicely. I've listened to a couple of the podcasts.
Oh,
really?
Oh, no. Oh, you did? Which episodes? Now I'm concerned.
Well, all of them, you know.
Oh, God. Oh, I hope not.
That's 160 episodes at this point.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
You know, what's 80 hours in my life?
It's not.
Oh, Lordy.
Man. So anyway, I had something brilliant to say. Now, I started at Disney in 1976, and I was hired to produce children's story records. And that was sort of the hot ticket at the music company at that time.
Okay.
And that went on to, I was producing children's records for story records for Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Peanuts and... You know, the Get Along Gang. And I did a lot of story records. But I did that for 8 years. So in 1984, the company was almost torn apart.
Yep.
And fortunately, Michael Eisner came in with his crew. And, you know, now we're going to do everything cool. And he started this division called TV Animation. And because I had produced a record called Mickey Mouse Disco, I was one of the bright young geniuses, you know. So I ended up magically developing a show called The Gummy Bears. So I was one of the first creative people hired by that division.
Okay.
While I was still doing my music company job.
Right.
But anyway, so yeah, and then I did that for like 9.5 years. So I was at Disney for about over 17 years. and just really good times. And, you know, I got to meet a lot of people, and I got to see people, you know, filming movies on the back lot. And there's no back lot anymore, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. And I left there in 1993. Okay. So it was a good run.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I kind of had like a question to kind of guide this. Let me see. Maybe we'll start with your road to a Goofy movie.
Yeah.
Like what was kind of going back as far as you want, obviously probably still a lot at the Disney company. What kind of led into that to get you into that position? You know, from where you started.
Did you propose it? Did they propose it to you? And then you worked on it and tweaked it and made it your own. Who's responsible for the Leaning Tower of Cheese? These are the need to know questions.
these are good questions. I had actually story edited a series called Goof Troop for Disney. And I forget, I think we did 65 episodes of that. Okay. And somewhere along the way, I mean, the whole premise was there's this boy who does not want to grow up to be Goofy. And so one of the episodes that I wrote was called Have Yourself a Goofy Little Christmas. And it's about a father and son. One. You what?
I remember that one.
You remember? Yeah, well, you have a good memory because...
Well, it helps.
You're
that,
23, you know.
A child just rewatches stuff as often as they can, right?
Exactly. So that was, in my brain, was sort of the prototype for the movie, which was a father and a son trying to figure out how to enjoy time together.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I came up with the idea for a Goofy movie.
Right.
But I think it was a pet project of Jeff Katzenberg.
Right.
And he had a similar experience where he was having trouble, I think, with his daughter. He couldn't connect with her, and they ended up going on a road trip. I can't remember where, so forgive me, but he said, I can't point to where it happened, but somehow during the time we spent in the car together, we bonded, you know. Okay. And I want to do something like that with Goofy. And I was like, okay, you know. So that became my number one project. And this is embarrassing, but I basically, we were in a building, it's right next to the Emmy building on Lancashire and whatever the other.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we had a whole floor that was empty. And they stuck me down there in a corner office with a computer and nobody else there. And I just sat and typed, you know. And embarrassingly, I did this for months and months. And they finally brought in a crew. Yep. And you know, that was Kevin Lima and Brian Pimentel and whatnot. And suddenly the place started to fill up with artists and they were drawing things and, you know, changing things. And it was like, wait a minute, I didn't write that. but again, it was a really big learning experience for me, because when you do TV animation, because the time constraints of, we have to do 65 episodes or 13 or whatever the order is. And then it has to be turned in and sent overseas and animated and brought back and put on the air. It, because that is such a strict schedule, pretty much anything that gets written ends up on the screen.
Right.
And working with the movie people, it was what I wrote this whole sequence with the bungee jumping, you know, it was funny and it's gone. You know, they
it
and then said, no, we don't want to do that. I was like, okay. You know,
yeah, it sort of sets it to not take things personally really quickly. Otherwise, it gets difficult, I suppose.
Yeah, very much. And you have to remember, I had been doing this for, you know, almost a decade and did suddenly have, you know, my stuff rewritten and changed and, you know, moved around. And I'm not faulting it at all, because I think the movie's brilliant. And if I had any, you know, goodness to add to it, yay for me. But you know, I think Kevin Lima and his crew did a fantastic job with the film. Mm-hmm. So, forgive me, but the film was not a blockbuster when it came out, but boy, did it grow at home, you know, on video. And the reason I asked you about the D23 convention is I went to one in 2015, maybe, and they wanted to do a Goofy movie reunion. Oh, okay. So you may have seen it. It's on YouTube and whatnot.
Yep. Yeah.
But they stuck us in the biggest hall there. And they said it holds like, I don't know, 900 people or something. And I said, oh, well, that's nice. I hope somebody shows up. They were lined up around the block and they had to turn away several hundred people.
Whoa.
They packed the place. It was the feeling was electric. So there was the producer, Don Hahn, was the host, and I was the writer. And, you know, we had video clips of Kevin Lima and Wally Shawn talking. And then we had all these actors, whatever those are, you know. So there was, you know, there's Goofy and Pete and Max and, you know.
Right. The whole thing.
And again, the surprise of it all is that nobody knew he was going to come out, but Tevin Campbell was there.
Oh, my God.
And the crowd went crazy. You know,
I bet. My God,
it's Powerline, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was a really exciting event. And, you know, I would love to do it again, but, you know, I think people would kill us if we try to do it. So
I don't know about that. They might like mob you, but I don't think kill you.
Yeah. Well,
maybe just maim.
You know, it would be purposeful. Just, light just a maiming.
Little, just a little maiming. It's just light maiming. It's okay.
So, you know, it's very gratifying when I go places, go to conventions and speak on panels and people say, oh, I love that movie, blah, 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 you know, and they go on about it. And it feels great. And, you know, I end up meeting people who are dressed as Powerline, who've reenacted the whole song, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you just think, these people are nuts. Seriously.
No, I get it.
You guys work, right? I don't work. Well, yes, I do. I work all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, these fans do these things. Why? Because they love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they paid me to sit in the corner by myself.
Right.
You know? But, you know, these other folks do this stuff just because they think it's great. You know, you go and you look at these different Goofy songs and they're sung by a cappella groups in competition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
There's a whole string of TikTokers out there now that are constantly doing cosplaying and dancing and doing the Powerline songs. And it's fabulous.
That's so funny.
Well, I feel bad for them because they're not having fun, but
So
anyway, I'm sorry. The question was, how did you get there? I had done the TV series and I just sort of naturally segued into writing the movie.
Yeah.
In the opening song where they're singing No More Jim, that's about you.
Is there truth to this?
Can you explain? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, I would be happy to. Kevin Lima is a really wonderful guy. I'm sure you've seen Enchanted and Tarzan. Oh,
yeah. Tarzan is another favorite of mine. Yeah.
And, you know, when they did the film, the storyboard artists put Kevin Lima and Brian Pimentel in the auditorium watching the opening number, you know. And I said, well, gee, that's so lucky for you that, you know, you got to be in the movie and Brian got to be in the movie. How come I'm not in the movie? Right. And he says, and just like off the top of his head, he says, you are in the movie. I said, no, I'm not. What are you talking about? He said, you know, that line from the movie, no more Jim, no more Jim. No more. And I thought, oh God, you got me. And that's not what the lyric is, but it,
right.
You know, the sad part is, and I don't like to do these podcasts and point fingers and go, you were mean to me, you know, right. Because really people aren't that mean to me. I worked on this movie and I checked it out. And I think I worked almost a full year on the movie. Yeah. And that included working alone and then working with the staff and whatnot. And I went to a couple of recording sessions and then suddenly it was like, okay, Jim, you're off the film.
Right.
Wait a minute. They haven't animated anything. You know, we've got beautiful storyboards and we haven't got the whole cast together yet. So I felt really sort of betrayed, you know, oh, I worked so hard on this and now I'm not on it. But I got to tell you, I finished it in 92, I think, writing it. Okay. And it didn't come out till 95.
Yeah.
And so I left Disney in 93. So I didn't know what they'd done with it. And I actually went to El Capitan Theater.
Oh my God.
Which is owned by Disney. Mm-hmm. Down in Hollywood to go
see the big pipe organ and everything.
What?
With the big pipe organ and everything.
Yeah. And I said, look, I'm the writer. Can I play the pipe organ? And they said, no.
You should have said you were a record producer. Maybe they would have let you do it then.
Absolutely. So I saw the film and it was like, oh my God, this is beautiful. You know?
Yeah.
And I took my family with me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, I have so many horror stories I could tell about the film that are fantastic horror stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for instance, Bill Farmer had been doing the voice of Goofy for years and years.
Yeah.
And I think at one point they said, we don't want him to sound like Goofy because this is a more of a legitimate story and mm-hmm. he'll sound like a doof, you know, and mm-hmm. and they tried it with normal voice and everything. And no, ended up doing Goofy. Worked great.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were a lot of stumbling blocks, but that's just typical film and television production.
Yeah. I mean, it's a story that took characters in a medium that they're not used to and moving them into like a serious, you know, feature length thing. And the fact that it came out in a way where the characters had that much depth was really cool. Like that was, I think, unique. And I had, you know, I've had a couple of people that I just know in my life who, when, you know, because people know that we have the podcast and when I was there, what you're working on, I'd say, we actually get to, you know, interview Jim and they're like, oh my God, a Goofy movie. Like, you know, that like they would all have some little thing about it that like that kind of reached them in a way that was kind of unique that a lot of others didn't. Like the one of my friends at work, she was like that, the representation of like a single dad. She's like, that resonated with me. Like that was a unique experience. Just a lot of those things and having like a good relationship, you know, proper, you know, relationship with your dad. That's not just the old slugger, you know.
I'm glad you brought that up because people have come up to me. They've come up to Bill Farmer. They've come up to all of us working on the film and said, I didn't get along with my dad and we saw this film and it was like, it sort of connected us, you know, and oh, this really sort of was a turning point in my life. And it was like, oh, well, good for you. I'm happy it worked out that way because, you know, you don't start off by saying, I'm going to write something that will become a cult classic and change people's lives.
Right.
Nobody does that.
And if you try, it won't work.
That's true. What is your favorite moment in anything that you've ever done in the Disney
space?
Yeah. World space.
My favorite moment. I don't know. You're asking a really good, but very difficult question because I
can't make it easy.
Well, no. I did the little story record for E.T. and they'd already done the album of the story of E.T. with Michael Jackson, and who knows why, it's beyond me. But so when I wrote the E.T. story, I did it from Gertie's point of view, which was Drew Barrymore, her little character.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I picked all the artwork, I wrote the copy, I got it all together, we booked the studio, and of course, Steven Spielberg shows up. And, you know, we start going through it and he's jumping in with suggestions. And I realized,
yeah,
I am not going to get my way on this one, you know, because this is Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
That'd be tough.
He went through the whole thing and he had her try this line and change this. And, you know, it was like, oh, this was great. And as he left and we all waved goodbye, I got on the talk back and switch and I said, Drew, you did a fantastic job. We're going to do the whole thing over again. And here's the reason. It wasn't like, oh, I don't want him directing.
Right.
Our books read word for word and we'd already printed the books.
Right.
And he was having her say all kinds of things, you know.
That's outstanding.
So, you know, when you ask me these things, it's like, yeah, you know, I got to go to a beach party house at Jeffrey Katzenberg's, you know, beach house. And, oh, I met Timothy Dalton, who was James Bond, you know, and it's like, there's all this cool stuff. That goes on there.
That's crazy.
And so what's my favorite moment? I'm not sure a moment, but sometimes people will say, well, what do you have a favorite show or anything like that? And, and I created a show called Tailspin, which I'm really proud of. And I would be happy to do, you know, 182 more of those, but
if I just blew in the not quite bomber jacket because he's a little big, so it's more like a khaki shirt and his little hat and his big old cargo plane.
Yeah, it's just this guy, you know.
I don't think you've seen it, have you?
I've seen little bits of it, just barely. Yeah. Yeah,
barely.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus, right?
Yes, okay, it's on Disney Plus.
Sweet.
And you know, it's odd because. You know, I don't think about things. You know, I worked on this, I worked on that, I met so and so, and then a little thought will pop into my head. Oh my gosh, I'm not sure you know who this is, but there was a popular singer named Janice Ian back in the day, and she came to visit the studio, and they said, "Jim, show her around." And it's like, oh, okay. So, you know, there's all these sort of little serendipities and whatnot.
Yeah, that's super cool. What about just doing the rapid fire round here, I guess. Your favorite moment that you wrote for a Goofy movie that made it into the film?
No, nothing I wrote ever got into the film. Well, no, actually, there's a story about, who was it? Somebody used to write for the Marx Brothers. And one of the things that the Marx Brothers would do, of course, is just go wherever they wanted to with it. Yeah. And evidently this author was standing in the lobby while they were doing a stage production of what he'd written.
Yeah.
And he was chatting with a guy and then he suddenly stopped and said, "Wait, I think I heard something I wrote."
Wait a second.
Yeah. So there's always those moments like, "Oh, I think I wrote that."
That part. Yeah.
So, it's so odd because, you know, you write things and you think, oh, this is great. And then as the show grows and progresses, you realize, oh, this is a good idea, but it has to now gel with the next idea. Mm-hmm. And so we need to alter this and whatnot. So, you know, I wrote a whole opening sequence that was a dream sequence. And it was about him playing a video game and losing. And Roxanne says to him, "Loser," you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But the dream is still there. It's just now, you know, he turns into Goofy. And it's like, oh, that's a much better dream, you know, because it sets up, I don't want to become my father.
Right.
And, there's a lot of stuff like that where, oh, I wrote all this and then, oh, that didn't work, but it got changed into this.
Right.
One line. One line that still cracks me up is the principal of the school, Principal Mazur, yeah. which was actually the vice principal at my high school. he says, don't waste your summers. Think about this. You can have science sleepovers, you know?
I remember that part.
And I just thought, that is just so funny, you know, that a teacher would say, don't waste your summer. Study. Right. You know?
Study. Science sleepover. Oh, I'll take that to heart. That sounds good. Yeah.
A lot of what you do is just experimental. You try people in certain parts. And we had written this part for this female. And I think Kevin Lima got it in his head. Oh, we should get a comedian, Judy Tenuta, to come in and, you know, read for this part. And she came in. It's like, great. She was a big, you know, star at the time. And she read through the thing. And you know, you just, you kind of do this. Oh, God. You know, and it just wasn't working. Not that right. she's not funny, right. but it wasn't working for the project, you know?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And so you kind of go away from it feeling like, oh, I failed. This is terrible, you know?
Right, right. Because you just think the right person to read the right.
Yeah, part. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and also, again, you wouldn't know these things, but Kevin Lima also did a couple of voices in the film.
Did he?
he says, "Say sassafras."
I love it. I love it.
You know, so you know they had that kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, that's funny.
So, out of curiosity, and this is just a me thing, we can totally cut this out. But the possum section, is that in any way connected to the country bears?
Yeah, that was definitely on the list.
Oh, on my God. List. My God, thank you so much. You're absolutely on the money.
Yes!
No, you're absolutely right. Because originally what we'd written was, you know, Goofy is telling his son, we're going to go somewhere so cool. You're going to love this, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever traveled across country, you see these big billboards like, visit Wall Drugs.
Right,
yep.
Yes.
Yep.
It's only 2 days away, you know, and
right.
free ice cream or yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So I had this sequence where they kept going by these signs that said, welcome to Paco's Water Park, you know, 800 slides and all, right. you know, it just looks like so cool. Right. And as they pull up, you can see over there, there's Paco's water park right there on the right side of the road. And Goofy says, we're here. And he turns left. and they go to the possum park,
possum
right?
Possum park.
And what's funny is I had just visited my sister who lives in the South.
Yeah.
And Lester's a real popular name. So I did Lester's Possum Farm. and of course it was the Country Bear Jamboree.
Yeah.
And the great thing is, you know, they don't touch their instruments
right?
No, not at all.
and yes. So I wrote that including, what was it? Bertha, Beulah and Beatrice or something. I can't even remember. And you know, when I saw it done, they did it brilliantly. You know, the heads pop amazing. Off and sparks
yeah. Yeah.
fly.
Oh, yeah.
And
he was having to like bump the thing so they'd get back to working.
Oh, yeah,
again.
Absolutely.
Oh, it was brilliant. Just perfect.
And that was, oh God, who did that voice? Well, bad story. I can't remember his name. His last movie role.
Oh, okay.
Pat Buttram, I think. Okay. So anyway.
That's great.
Yeah, but thank you. You know, because the possum park actually was something that I said, this has got to be in the movie because it's so terrible.
Right.
You know, this is exactly what Goofy thinks is a great idea and yeah. exactly what Max thinks is a horrible idea.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Right. Right. So, I mean, just, you know, like every child who goes
it's
to
the turning well, point because, you know, their worlds collide at this point.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Oh, that's really funny.
No, you absolutely got it. It's yeah.
Yes.
What's funny is I didn't write this, but you know, all these people are in the audience going, yeah. And there's that little girl with no teeth and the big glasses. Yeah. And,
hair like mine, you know, it's just like right there.
It was fashioned after you.
How did you know me as a child?
You know? Well, you know, the other thing is, and these always sound like crazy little stories, but my family came in to visit the studio one day. And yeah. so I walked my wife and kids around and said, oh, here's where they're drawing this. And here's where, you know, I'm sitting and whatnot. And one of the gals was designing Roxanne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who I unfortunately called Dolores early on. And she was trying to figure out, well, what do girls wear now? You know, what do I put on her? Mm-hmm. And my daughter, Robin, had on a pair of, you know, jean shorts kind of rolled up and, you know, a t-shirt and whatnot.
Yeah.
And Carol looked at her and said, that's it right there.
Yeah.
And that's what she drew.
Yeah. You know? Well, and that was something that I remember, you know, cause I just went back and reviewed this movie again recently with a fresh adult mind. And I was like, this clothing is so interesting because it was all these like classic Disney characters kind of fleshed out in this new world. And everyone was dressed in the 90s. It was like all 1994 outfits. And it just sent me back. It was amazing. Like, oh my God, look at Max's like wide pants and like all the outfits are just perfect for that.
I mean, I was in school at that point, so I totally saw that down the hallways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because there are little things. And again, this is all in the animation process because you wouldn't necessarily write this.
Right.
But there's a scene where Max is skateboarding, you know, through town and doing these crazy stunts. And he ends up going through a house. And there's a baby about to stick a fork
in the outlet.
And he just goes, what? And he pulls it away from the kid. You know, it's just like, he doesn't talk about it, doesn't say that's a bad thing, just does it, you know?
Grabs it, the slapstick is good.
He's a good kid, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's a good kid.
When I did Goof Troop, Goofy was Goofy, Bill Farmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Max was this little junior high school kid, you know, played by a girl. Dana Hill, I think.
Yeah.
And
well, wasn't she in Vacation? She was like in Griswold Family Vacation. It doesn't matter. Continue.
Yeah. No, you're right.
She was. Okay.
So when we moved everything up to the movie, we moved, you know, Max up to high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dana wouldn't have, I think she was unfortunately had passed on by that point, but we wanted, you know, an older sounding, you know, voice. Male character.
Yeah.
And we got Jason Marsden to play Max. And I think he's brilliant in it. But what I didn't realize is he doesn't sing in the movie. There's somebody else sings Max's part.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I think Jason was very gracious about it. You know, it's your movie. You do what you want. But when we were at D23, one of the big surprises was Jason got up with Bill and they sang that song together, which he never got to sing in the movie.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I know Disney was very big on finding different actors for the singing and the voicing at that point in time, like between
during the Disney Renaissance.
Yeah, during the Disney Renaissance era. Yeah. Like right in this area, it was just like every time it was like very few characters where it felt like they were like, especially the male
characters. They trusted the actor to be able
to carry. Like, we don't know if you're going to be able to sing. We're going to find somebody else.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I'm kind of shattered because the movies I grew up with, which you would call, you know, antiques, are movies like West Side Story and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so you think, oh, I really know this movie. I've seen it a million times. And then I find out, well, I knew Natalie Wood didn't do this singing, but so many of them didn't do their own singing.
You know?
And it's like, that's not right.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's one of those situations where like, you know that you could find someone who can do both, right? Like it is possible to find a person who can do both. It might not be as big of a name, but you could do it.
You know, you go back to the early films and, you know, nobody knew who Adriana Casalotti was.
Right, exactly.
And people did sort of know who Cliff Edwards' Ukulele Ike was, you know. And so the fact that Ukulele Ike plays Jiminy Cricket, and he not only does the voice, but he was a performer. He sang.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So he did everything for that character.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But also Disney at that time was running on a smaller budget and didn't want to pay for multiple people to have to do the same character though.
Absolutely.
So
and they didn't advertise. Look, we've got Ukulele Ike.
Right, right, no. Exactly. And
at
they
that
never
point,
did.
You wouldn't have even gotten acknowledgement because they weren't acknowledging writers.
No, huh?
It's just crazy. Yeah, I'm glad the video game industry had the same problem in the 80s.
Yeah, they
and
did.
And they had to figure that out. It's just like, you got to give all the you know, creators credit here, gang.
Speaking of giving you credit, did you notice or were you aware that the credit that you received at the end of a Goofy movie had your name spelt incorrectly?
Yes. For the listeners at home, he had his face in his hands.
I screen grabbed it. It'll probably be somewhere in one of our many posts.
I like to think that the reason I don't have any huge royalties is they sent it to somebody with a misspelled name, you know. No, yeah, you're right. It's spelled, and again, I wasn't there, so I can't, mm-hmm. you know, say, oh, I should have caught that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But they spelled it J-Y-M-M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
That's yeah.
But it's a weird typeface. You can't tell.
Yeah. Who's really?
I re-noticed it the other day and sent it over to Matt. And I was like, did you know this? And he's like, wait, let me triple check too. Am I doing it wrong?
You're right. You know, I was at the time I was still sitting in the corner. Kevin Lima was in the office next to me and he would come in and he'd say, oh my gosh, I saw this documentary last night on, you know, KCET all about, you know, fishing.
Right. Cool.
What about fishing? He said, well, they talked about all the steps you go through when you fly cast, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he said, that just seems like a dance move to me, you know? and so it is.
Well, so it is. Yeah. That's so cool.
But, you know, you get into these arguments, and argument isn't the right word, because you're trying to get your point across with someone else and you're disagreeing.
Right.
But there's a sequence, and you won't remember this because you've never seen the film, but they go over the waterfall, right?
Yeah.
And Goofy falls, and Max has this tent attached to him, which is caught up in the wind. It lifts him. And he does the perfect cast and he catches his dad and he reels him up, you know, and they hug and they're just sort of floating there. And I remember Kevin saying to me, why is there wind there? I don't get that. You know, I said, you're right. And you're wrong. You know? Nobody's going to say, oh, there's no wind at a waterfall. You know?
Right. Also, that was your biggest problem with the physics? Like, I don't know, like...
Yeah. No. But the thing is that... I'll give you an example. Carl Gears, who produced the Winnie the Pooh... The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Winnie the Pooh. It is now Winnie the Pooh.
Right.
Pooh.
Yeah.
And there's a sequence where they go into a cave and they're looking around. And one of the, what I call baby suits, you know, minor executives upstairs said, there's no light source here. How come we can see everything that's going on? And he said, because it's a cartoon, you know?
Right.
It's not the type of thing you need to think about too much. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And again, this one slips by everyone is that in the first Winnie the Pooh featurette, I think it's, well, maybe it's Tigger and the Blustery Day or whatever it was, you know, Christopher Robin blows up this balloon and ties it and gives it to Pooh and Pooh holds it and it goes up in the air.
Yeah.
And it's like,
why is no one keeping
the breath, you know?
Right.
Now, DuckTales was the first syndicated show that we did. Up until then, all of our shows were shown through networks, ABC, mm-hmm. right. CBS, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I think Buena Vista Television said, why don't we just sell this directly to the syndicators, the syndicates around the country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we came up with the idea for DuckTales, but we couldn't put Donald into DuckTales because he was one of the main characters in the cartoon pantheon. And so when I wasn't doing the individual episodes, I was brought in to do a 5-part story that was cut into a movie that was shown as a pilot for the series.
Got it.
And in one of the episodes, I had to explain why Donald isn't in the series. And he goes off to the Navy. Great. But I had to get permission to do that sequence, you know, because we had to show Donald, you know.
Right.
And they said, okay, if that's all he's in, then fine, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the series went on without Donald, and that's fine. But I have to tell you. I have to tell you, I think the show was primarily created by David Wiemers and Ken Koontz. And David Wiemers, I heard him say once, I know these characters so well that when I'm driving to work, I have conversations with Launchpad McQuack while I'm driving. But it's true. That you know these people so well that you know what they'd say. And
yeah.
They're like family after a while, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was one thing that I had heard about you. Wave my finger. That you write these plots that you were like one of the first ones on a kid's show to do like the cliffhanger episodes. Am I incorrect on that?
No, you're not incorrect.
Okay, cool.
The thing about doing episodic television, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Friends, whatever, is that sometimes there's kind of a arc to the season or to the series. But when it comes to cartoon shows, it's sort of like they do this adventure and then rewind and we start over again with the next show. They're not connected in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But when they asked me to write this 5-parter, well, I wrote, I think, 4 or 5 of them, but the point was they were being shown in a particular order. They had to be, you know. Yeah. So that's why I could end, you know, one episode knowing that I was leading right into the next episode.
Right.
And that's a rarity usually, because when you've got 65 episodes of something, you don't know what order they're going to be shown in.
Right. Oh, I gotcha. You had the unique ability to have a timeline actually set up across your episodes.
Yeah, in fact, unique is my middle name.
Fair enough.
It's good to know.
Well, yeah, I've had so much fun. And like I said, I would sit here and do this for days, but I know you have your time constraints and whatnot.
And Zoom has time constraints on us.
But this has been a pleasure. Yeah, we really appreciate the opportunity.
Amazing. Too, believe me. I applaud what you're doing, and I look forward to listening to how brilliant I was. And
I'm excited.
If I can do you justice, we'll see. We'll see what happens. That sounds good. Well, we will talk to you soon, sir. Alrighty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And on that note, this has been WD Carousel of Podcast. My name's Crystal.
And I'm Ian.
And we hope you have a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Just a dream away.